You are listening to the Effective Statistician Podcast, the weekly podcast with Alexander Schacht and Benjamin Pieske, designed to help you reach your potential, lead great science, and serve patients while having a great work-life balance. In addition to our premium courses on the Effective Statistician Academy, we also have lots of free resources for you across all kinds of different topics within that academy. Head over to theeffectivestatistician.com and find the academy and much more for you to become an effective statistician. I'm producing this podcast in association with PSI, a community dedicated to leading and promoting the use of statistics within the healthcare industry for the benefit of patients. Join PSI today to further develop your statistical capabilities with access to the ever-growing video-on-demand content library, free registration to all PSI webinars, and much, much more. Head over to the PSI website at psiweb.org to learn more about PSI activities and become a PSI member today. Welcome to another episode of The Effective Statistician. And today I'm super happy to talk about a topic that was on my radar for quite some time, but I never found the right person to actually talk about it. And therefore, I'm super happy that Ning is today on the show and we can speak about the R Consortium. So welcome to the episode and see this a podcast, Ning. Maybe you can start by introducing yourself.
Sounds great. Thank you so much for having me today. So my name is Ning, and right now I'm at WE. I recently joined at WE about 3 months ago. And before that, I spent 10 years at Roche Genentech. I was trained as a statistician, so I graduated from University of Wisconsin-Madison with a focus on computational genomics. After that, I stayed in academia a little bit. At Roche, I started as a statistician for the first 5-6 years. And then kind of like on the side, because I don't really know SAS coming to the industry. So myself and also several friends within Roche, we actually started a R user community at that time, kind of teaching people how to like write R packages, how to write Shiny apps, and how to use Git. And then during my 5 or 6 years learning at Roche Genentech, basically, our leadership team decided to have this strategy of adopting open source languages and modernized technology. So I got moved to an innovation team. So I got the opportunity to lead an innovation team to drive adoption of R, to drive the cloud migration, and also the kind of Git adoption and Shiny adoption, etc. So that was kind of how I got involved in this whole very exciting R transformation in the cross-industry world and also within Roche Genentech at that time.
I think there's a couple of companies that have invested quite a lot into R. Roche was definitely one of the early movers. Many more companies that go into that direction, but I think none of the companies have as radically transformed as Roche did, at least looking from the outside. So the R Consortium, did you personally got involved in that? How did that happen?
So basically, it kind of was triggered by some internal discussion about why are we not using R for regulatory submission? Actually, adoption of R, I think within Roche, we have been discussing that for more than 10 years. What I heard was even in 2010-ish time, people actually started talking about of R, etc. As a group, we tried to figure out why the industry is not using R for regulatory submission. In the beginning, people were like, oh, because FDA doesn't accept that. But if you do a little bit more research, you realize that since 2015, I think FDA issued a statement saying that FDA doesn't require any specific programming language, and you just need to make sure that your program is traceable and have high quality. And they have been repeating the same message during many conferences over there. So basically, FDA does accept R, and also for the kind of younger generation reviewers, we learned that they come out of school with R skill, Python skill, and they already use R in their day-to-day job anyways. And we realized the bottleneck is really that there is no good example showing people how to use R for regulatory submission, like how to put your materials in a certain format, like through the ECTD submission portal so that the FDA reviewers can retrieve the information they needed during review. So with that, we kind of decided to have a working group working together with FDA to do some kind of mock submissions to FDA and put everything in the public so that for companies who want to do R submission, they can use those mock submissions as a template to show them how to do certain things.
This is so cool. And I remember when I left university in 2002, so that is 24 years ago, I was already using R. And although I was more of a SaaS trained person, but all the new younger people at that time were already using R, and all the packages were already done in R. And so it took quite some time to get here. But I think the R Consortium actually played a very, very critical role in that. What's the role of R Consortium in the whole R space?
That's a very good question. So I think R Consortium as an organization, basically it is not pharma specific. So it is a nonprofit organization trying to promote the good practices and usage of R across different industries. During the recent years, I see pharma definitely being one of the most active space with the most number of working groups for R Consortium because our recent adoption of R and open source language. And under R Consortium, there are several working groups. I think the most active two or three are like the submission working group, where we work together with FDA on a number of pilot submissions, trying to showcase how to submit certain components to FDA. And there is also a R validation hub where people found the materials really, really useful. They try to come up with white papers to document what does validation mean for a open source language, and also they open source some of the tools over there in terms of quality metrics measurement, etc. And I also know there are several conferences, R-related conferences that our consortium is supporting. Yeah, so I definitely feel like our consortium as a non-profit organization provided this very nice platform for us to collaborate across the companies and also with FDA.
So basically, the R Consortium is the organizational backbone of the whole R community across different industries. And it's great to hear that the pharma industry got on board and now is very active. And I'm pretty sure many other industries can benefit from it and vice versa. So you already mentioned the submission case studies. So what do you see, kind of, how are these leveraged by the different companies? Is this embraced, or is that still some kind of outlier here and there? Or what's the status of R-based submissions?
Right, yeah. Maybe I can first give an overview about the pilot that we are running, and then I can also share that, like, how the good practice evolved over time, like based on our learnings, etc. So for our consortium submission working group, right now we are at pilot 6 and 7. We already finished 4 pilots. There are 4 pilots that already have FDA response letter. Recently, the number 4 was completed. If people are interested, the letter is on our website right now. So the first one was very simple. Pilot 1 was very simple. Basically, we tried to submit 4 TLGs using the CITES Pilot 1, the simulated data, to submit 4 TLGs. We had the ECTD portal, and then to make sure the FDA reviewers were able to use the exact same package, same environment to reproduce these 4 TLGs. And for pilot number 2, we add a shiny component. So basically, we believe that right now, with the trials being more and more complicated and more endpoints, more and more complex measurements, etc., like shiny could be a really, really nice supplementary tool to accelerate review. So for pilot 2, we success a shiny app to FDA. And in pilot 3, we submitted, in addition to TLF code, we also submitted ADAM code so that to enable the FDA reviewers to reproduce the code to generate ADAM as well. In pilot 4, the recent one was a very bold one. Basically, we submitted a shiny app through container and WebAssembly. So the FDA reviewer was able to review, like reproduce the environment using Docker and WebAssembly, but there were also some IT challenges that's kind of like outlined in the response letter. In pilot 5, we are trying to submitting the dataset in JSON format instead of XPT format, so that people don't need to do this like artificial conversion from like a JSON data file to XPT data file over there. And then pilot 6 and 7 are kind of like our playground right now to trying out different AI solutions. Pilot 6 is trying to use AI to generate the element ELF. And pilot 7 is trying to like create benchmark data set and benchmark test cases for AI tools and also kind of traditional open source tools. So that's where we are right now. Back to your question about how does this impact the companies like real submission, what I heard was definitely that I heard from multiple companies like Novo and J&J that when they did their first R submission, they closely studied our pilot submission cases and tried to mimic what we did and try to avoid the bottleneck or the caveats we encountered at that time. Roche the same, that we try to follow the open pilot's learnings over there. And the other thing I want to call out is that also because of those pilot submissions, we were able to influence FDA to update some of their guidance or documents. For example, like in the past, in their file format guidance, they said like no zip file, and they didn't specify too much about like the files with .r like suffix. So we were not sure whether we can submit a proprietary R package because oftentimes that comes with a zip file, the suffix, and also we wasn't sure how to submit a .r file. So in the very beginning, we even artificially converted the .r file to .txt file. Last year, actually, FDA was able to update their file format guidance, specifically saying that, oh, we allow the zip file for R package submission, and we allow for like .r, etc., like hybrid suffixes around the R ecosystem. So with that, actually, that streamlined a lot of the operational side of the submission as well.
That is so cool, this overall collaboration and the influence it has on various companies, but also on the FDA. And it shows how people, if they have a common goal, can work very, very effectively together. I also think that that will overall help quite a lot to make process better, like the Shiny thing. Have you done anything that is more HTML based, so some kind of R markdown, so that you don't need a container or something like this, but just an HTML file to have some kind of interactive graphics?
We haven't submitted a HTML, but I feel like the WebAssembly portion of the pilot 4 is kind of toward that direction. Basically, for the WebAssembly approach, a reviewer will be able to open the Shiny app in their own browser without too much of environment setup. So that one actually went through quite smoothly, I would say.
Because I think that is definitely part of the future, that we don't submit documents where the only difference to the pre-electronic submission is that it's now a PDF or a document instead of an actual binder, physical binder. Yeah. And the biggest advantage is having hyperlinks, but now actually embracing what's possible with electronic submissions, having interactive things, having much more kind of traceability, all these kind of different things, is there's so much opportunity in the future. And I'm really curious what will happen in terms of the generative AI. I'm really looking forward to that because I would personally have lots of questions around that. Because I've used, or I tested AI for producing text around tables and things like this. And it's not as I would like it to be still. But what's your perception up to now?
Yeah, that's exactly kind of like our motivation of like moving to Pilot 7, where I mentioned that we started to think about what does benchmark mean for the clinical trial reporting and also for trial design, basically the biostatistics and programming related tasks. So for Pilot 7, actually what we're doing right now is that we ask the community to contribute their AI skills. As you probably know, that basically skill is a very powerful like approach to provide SOP to AI or AI algorithm to tell them like when to use certain packages, when to use certain tools, and how to like QC before return the result to me, etc. So we asked the community to open source several skills they're writing. So right now we have like three sets of skills. One is about sequential design, one is about trial simulation, and one is about item generation. And after open sourcing those skills, right now we are also asking the community to contribute benchmark test cases. So we ask people to provide us the craziest test case or the most weird corner case they encountered. And we try to improve those AI tools based on those corner cases. We are still at a very early stage. I think we only started probably like 2 months or more, a little bit over a month ago, but there is a very strong contribution over there. I saw that there are like over 50 stars in the repository and we have over 100 issues now. So hopefully with that this approach, we will come up with some high quality skills so that it can help us to manage the kind of like uncertainty around generative AI a little bit better, and then to kind of really unleash that in clinical trial setting.
I have the feeling there is another episode in that. Thanks so much, Ning, for this awesome discussion and getting us information about the role of the R Consortium, what's overall going on in the community, how much that is impacting our industry, our collaboration with the FDA, and also to have a look out what further things will come in the future. Thanks so much, Ning. One final thing, if someone is more new in the R Consortium area, what would be good things to check out and learn about?
Yeah, that's a good question. So for R Consortium, one thing I'm really proud about is everything is public. So for anyone who is interested in our working group or any of the projects, all the meeting minutes are on our website, and all the recordings you can also find on our website. And also everyone is welcome to join our Slack channel. So I think for people who are exploring, it will be nice to maybe go through some of the meeting minutes and also go through the Slack discussions and identify which specific area they want to get involved in.
We'll put that all into the show note, the different links to all of that. Of course, the link to Ning's address and page so that you can follow her there as well. Thanks so much, Ning.
Sounds great.
This show was created in association with PSI. Thanks to Rain and her team at VVS, well, put the show in the background, and thank you for listening. Reach your potential, lead great science, and serve patients. Just be an effective statistician. This show was created in association with PSI. Thanks to Rain and her team at VVS for help with the show in the background, and thank you for listening. Reach your potential, lead great science, and serve patients. Just be an effective statistician.